So this is our last week with clinging. I mean, craving. And I think what I originally wanted to do was to tie all of this together through feeling tones. Originally, that's what I wanted to kind of help us begin to see when Suze is talking about the gift of practice in relation to pushing and pulling. There's a thing that we're actually noticing with pushing and pulling. It's not just, oh, I'm pushing away from this, or I'm trying to get this. It is the felt sense of craving. It's the only time we can know before next month. Next month, when we get into clinging, we're so identified with whatever it is that we wanted originally that it's impossible, I believe, to even know you're stuck in it. Where you really know is in craving, because craving is the felt sense of suffering. It's the felt sense of that detachment between what you want and the reality. So I want to give you a little bit of a story. It's with my youngest son. I made a fatal mistake that parents often make. When he was very little, he wanted this motorized car. And whoever came up with the idea of putting Christmas toy things like magazines in the newspaper in the build up for Christmas, we need to just take that person out back, because kids would get that little insert in the newspaper and begin to dream of all the things that they were going to get for Christmas based on these little inserts. And my son was a car fanatic. All I really had to buy him for Christmas was little matchbox cars, and he was happy. So he saw this motorized car and he wanted that. And I agreed that I would get it for him. And I probably, if I had not said, I will get this for you, I should have avoided that. But somehow it just seemed so perfect for him. And I said I would get it for him. But back when he was a kid, these motorized cars for kids were so expensive. I could never afford to buy that car for him, never, over the years of his life. And then he got too old for it. But just so you get a sense of how ingrained this is with us, what we're talking about here, this is not something that it's like, oh, I want to quit eating cookies after 9. It's not like that. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about our entire life being about the practice and only the practice, not about fixing ourselves. Because my son is 30, I think he's like 33, 34, somewhere around in there. And he still, if he goes into a toy store and he sees a motorized bike, he longs to have one. He is a grown man. He's 6'5". And yet, if he sees a motorized little car, that's what he wants. You know, it's as if our mind gets stuck on craving. It's the felt sense of being stuck on craving, stuck on it. And next month, when we move into clinging, we are absorbed into that craving and we can't see outside of it. So right now, we are trying to see what is that felt experience of wanting. And the only way we can really experience it is we have to feel that push and pull that Zeus was pointing to. We have to learn to feel that. But that push and pull does not feel comfortable. It does not feel, we don't like it. We'd rather just, it's like the tension in a symphony before the resolve. You're so leaning into the resolve that you hate the tension. Beethoven was a master at creating tension in music and leaving it there. While you're like, your mind is already going to the resolve because you need that. And he would leave that tension in the music for several notes before he would resolve it. He was just a master about that. But so what we're talking about is it possible to create an interest, a humor, a slight kind of when you're inquisical about something, you know, you're interested or curious, but words that you're looking for words that bring a sense of adventure to the whole thing. Not this self-improvement, how do I fix this? Because what we're trying to investigate and look into is so ingrained in our human makeup that it can't be about fixing me. It can't be about fixing you, fixing me. We'll get lost in the trying to fix me, and then you have now got caught in the wanting and you're clinging to what you want to become. So instead, this has to be something that is funny, is humorous. I'm noticing, I'm watching, I'm feeling the tug of it, but I am it's more jovial than that. So when I've gone to the store with my son, I try to stand in front of the little electronic car so he won't really see them. You know, like if we go to the store to get his daughter something, you know, I try to stand in front of the cars, you know, and he'll tell me several times, you know, I've already seen that, Mama. I saw that like a long time ago before you even noticed that I saw it. I mean, there's a way in which we have to bring a levity to this wanting because it is insidious and it's constant. But the gift of it is that, but for this capacity to feel the wanting, we would be forever lost and clinging. That but for this craving, this sense of knowing that I'm wanting something, knowing that I'm wishing I had something that's not here, or wishing I had something other than what's here. I mean, all of this wanting, that capacity, the gift of it is, because we can practice feeling it, because we can practice and learn to get used to that felt sense, that tug, that pull, we are not forever doomed to clinging. We're not doomed into what we're about to go into, because what we're about to go into is much more automatic. I mean, we've slowed it down to a few months, but it's pretty quick. Once you get identified in something, it's almost impossible for you to even hear anything other than what you think it is. It's like, I'm not going to really talk about it because we're going to talk about it next month. But by the time we get into clinging, we're so sure that what we think is going on is what we think. We're so caught into what we want, or what we believe it should be, that it's near impossible to break us from that. So the gift that we have is this felt sense of unpleasant. It's not even in the pleasant, because the pleasant is so tied to things being right that it's hard for us even to see the suffering in pleasant. But unpleasant, we can immediately sense into the suffering. So it's bringing a level of appreciation and joy around noticing that you feel unpleasant, that something doesn't feel right. Because if something doesn't feel right, it is a signal that you are grasping. It is a signal that you want something other than what's here, or you don't like what's here and you're pushing against it. That signal doesn't mean that you have to accept whatever, because there might be some things that you really need to just stop, or it needs to be corrected. I'm not saying that just because it's unpleasant, but the unpleasantness is what wakes us up to pay attention. Am I just doing this by habit, or am I choosing to act in a certain way, to connect in a certain way, to change something? Not by habit, but by response. And if it's by response, then you are aware of your actions and the impact of that actions, and you're not just setting in motion negative karma that come back later and haunt you. So that's what this is about. This is all about living a blameless life and a way of living out our lives from this awareness of what's going on. I know what I'm doing. I know what's going on, and I'm not just reacting impulsively. I actually want to stop here, because I usually talk much longer than this, but a couple of people, I think, have asked if we could spend more time in small groups talking. So we thought at the end of every month, you spend a month kind of toying with this, listening to various talks about it, different ways of looking at it. So at the end of the month, we wanted to create more time for us to have a back and forth about it. And so I want to stop, put us into small groups for those of you that want to stay. We'll go into small groups for about 20 minutes, but then that'll still leave us 20 minutes to kind of talk with each other, ask questions, what you notice, things like that. So I want to give those of you who want to have an opportunity to leave and don't want to go into small groups an opportunity to say goodbye, and then I can divide the rest of us up into little groups. Internal values are saying, it's things like that you want to start looking for, because some of this, what we call unpleasant, is really warning signs, notifications. It's the body talking to us from a place that's outside of words. And so we can hear, that we can feel what the body's trying to tell us rather than the words. That's what I mean by an adventure. It's more of a learning to experience life more than just everything is okay if I feel okay. Everything can be okay if you feel unokay, because you're noticing I got to line things up a little bit differently than I have been. See what I'm saying? There's a way in which this thing that we call not okay, I think the Buddha kept trying to point to, that is not a sign that something's wrong. That's why the first ennobling truth is there is suffering. It's like we can't even get to it unless we're willing to acknowledge that there's some suffering here. But the question is, what does that suffering mean? Does it mean something's wrong? Or should you be thanking yourself for catching you like, you know, when you're standing there at the refrigerator, the reason why we're just standing there is because somewhere the body is saying, don't do it, don't do it, wait a minute, don't do it. And we're standing there like wanting something and can't really do it. Because when we're lost in clinging, we will go in that refrigerator, get what we want, go back, sit down, start eating it before we ever even notice that we even wanted the ice cream, and half of the little Ben and Jerry carton's gone. So this standing there is like the body is like, don't do it. Wait a minute. Kind of helping us see. Ah, something's amiss here. I hope I'm not really setting us all up for dreading next month. That's my, because we are going into a different world, but it's, I don't know. It's just good that we've spent this time talking about the unpleasantness and getting a different relationship with that.
I think Charlotte might want to say something.
Charlotte?
Yes, thank you.
Oh, go ahead, Charlotte. I didn't even see you.
I've been preparing my will in the end of life papers.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was doing it, I got up one day and I was feeling funny. And I realized, oh, I'm afraid of death. And that's the craving for life and the wanting to continue. And so that was very helpful to see that. So I could continue with the will.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing that we talked about in my group was I want to move into a smaller low-income facility, and I have all this stuff that I have gathered for all these years. And so just looking at it and realizing that I had used that as emotional therapy. Just like going to the refrigerator and opening the door. Well, there is that beautiful piece of glass that now I have to give away.
Mm-hmm.
So would I have been better off if I had just saved the money? Anyway, that's what I wanted to say. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Charlotte. This is what happens when we start actually touching into craving. We can start seeing things. Actually, all we're really doing is just seeing the world more clearly, just seeing the way things truly are. And it's not a judgment on you or anyone else. You know, it's just the seeing more clearly. And clear comprehension brings wisdom, because we can see it for what it truly is and not our judgment, our perception or assumptions or all of that cloud the truth of what's going on. When we see things as they truly are, just see it, we have all the tools within us to deal with it. What we can't deal with is our perceptions of things. You know, our perceptions of things can wrap us up in fear, can wrap us up in rage, can get us all caught up in all these really intense emotions that we can't fix because we're battling with an assumption or we're battling with it with some perception. But when we're dealing with life in reality as it is, then we have all these inherent capacities as human beings to deal with whatever's in front of us. That's what we're trying to begin to see into. So are we good? Are we, we're feeling pretty confident we can see this. We know where we're at, because when we turn the corner next month, it will be in a different location. Do I start? I don't think I start next month, do I? I don't teach next.
Yeah,
I do. Okay, good. Good. So I'll explain.
You better, because none of the rest of us are prepared.
I will start us out and turn the corner and help us see what we're turning into next week.
Also on the webpage is a button around Donna. And we know that this is a, these are strange times on so, and they're affecting us on so many levels. And they may also be affecting you around finances. So for sure, take care of yourself and just know that Sims is still offering all of this. We're still paying rent on our place in the U District. The teachers still have lives that they need to continue. So anything that you can offer is received with a lot of gratitude. And I just thought we would close this morning with, we kind of started with me encouraging us to bring a sense of kindness and care to our practice. And why don't we close with some phrases of kindness and care? I think the world could benefit from all of that. I know I always do individually. So being quiet for another minute or two and settling back in, letting go of all the words that have been shared, and just coming back into our settled, relaxed place, opening our hearts to each other, not just those of us gathered this morning, those in your family and circle of friends, neighborhood, and certainly our entire city and country, other countries, all the beings, those on two legs, those on four legs or 16 legs, those without legs, all the creatures. This pandemic has brought us even more aware of how totally interconnected we are. We all benefit when we all benefit. So may we wish to all a sense of safety and protection. We wish for all a sense of peace and happiness. We extend our wishes for good health and vitality. And we extend our wishes for living with ease and well-being.